So did you make some section titles for chapter 1? Someone would like to read maybe their chapter titles, huh? Well, we did chapter 1 already, so just gradually we'll get into the feeling of it, yeah?
From 1 to 27, observing the armies in the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And after that is Arjuna's reasons for 1
to 30. Right, okay, that's good. Yeah, this chapter is also called Sainya Darshan. So it means observing the armies. That's what Prabhupada called the chapter in English. And in other versions, it's called Arjuna Vishad Yoga. Yeah, so originally, we see that there's these two sections. Why? Because up to verse 27, it appears that Arjuna is going to fight and there's going to be a war. But from verse 28, when he speaks what's going on inside, and he says, Vishve Mam Svadhinam Krishna, seeing his relatives and how he feels so distressed, it becomes evident that Arjuna is not going to fight, at least not now, at least not until Krishna enlightens him. So, therefore, the first 27 verses are considered introductory, because this part of the, what was it called again? Yeah, this is the Bhishma Parva. And from chapter 25, so the Mahabharata, from chapter 24, there has to be some kind of lead-in to the Bhagavad Gita. It can't just, Krishna just starts speaking, you know, the philosophy all of a sudden. So this is like a connecting section, connecting Mahabharata to the Bhagavad Gita. And it's considered that even those verses, even the ones spoken by Duryodhana, are purifying and enlightening. just like salt, when you put it in water, it becomes one with the water. Or if you put salt in lassi, it merges with the lassi. So similarly, Duryodhana's and Dhritarashtra's one verse, which he has, you know, for the Bhagavad Gita, it all merges into the Bhagavad Gita and assumes the same quality as Krishna's words. So they're also potent. Now, I just recently looked in the VTE study guide and I saw that they also have another way of looking at this chapter, and that is to divide those first 27 verses into three sections, which would make altogether four. So the first one is this introduction, preparing for battle. And then from 14 to 20, they named it Signs of Victory, because from there we see that they blow their conch shells, and then in verse 20, you know, it's mentioned Kapidvaja, Arjuna has his Hanuman flag. And we mentioned all those things yesterday. And then from 21 to 27, they felt it appropriate to name it Bhakta Vatsala, Krishna as Bhakta Vatsala. We look and we'll... So you can consider that also, because in that section he's bringing Arjuna in between the armies. He's following it, because he's Achyuta. In verse 21, he's called Achyuta, which means he's infallible in his love. And as I explained yesterday, that the word Achyuta indicates his Bhakta Vatsala feature. So that's also a consideration. Basically, the chapter is divided into two sections. One is the preparations for war, or you could call it observing the armies. That's the introduction. And then the second is Arjuna's doubts, the last section, from 28 to 46. Somebody else have a different titles they would like to offer? Or enlightenment, some other titles?
Bewildered speech of Arjuna.
The bewildered speech of Arjuna?
28 to 46.
28 to 46. Yeah? Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Arjuna falls in Maya. Right? Arjuna's Maya. Anyone else? Different? All the titles are okay. I mean, you know, there's different. It's good to see if you have, you know, another way. Yeah? Symptoms of material attachment. That's good. Okay, so now we'll begin chapter 2. This is called Sankhya Yoga, the Sanskrit term. And, Prabhupada, Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll do that. Okay, so let's do that first then. You have a question? From chapter 1? You don't have chapter?
I have.
So you ask.
This Duryodhana, the diplomatic behavior which is there in the first part of the section of
Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, Duryodhana Gita.
Duryodhana Gita. So, actually...
It would be good if we can take the questions, too. So why don't we give him the microphone? Because you're listening to the tape and then suddenly you don't know what's going on. It helps the people who listen to the tape.
Yeah. Actually, this is he's behaving as a very intelligent kshatriya. Actually, if we see
Arjuna,
Duryodhana actually.
Oh, Duryodhana.
He's trying to please each and everyone.
He's trained in Niti Shastra.
So my question is that this is like why we call him diplomatic? Because he's behaving as a proper kshatriya and trying to cater the needs of the people.
Well, the word diplomatic is not necessarily bad. It's a connotation for us, because we're like trained to be Brahmins, so diplomatic is like lower, right? Vaishnavas say, you know, kutinati, it's like an anatta. You know, it's one of the four weaknesses, which is mentioned in Hridaya Dalbalya in chapter 2. So, to be, you know, duplicitous. I mean, he's being more than diplomatic, he's being duplicitous. And of course, you know that, you know, he tried to kill the Pandavas and all these other things, so it's more than diplomacy.
One more thing. Arjuna, we say, you fall in the Yoga Maya. So
yeah.
I'm a little confused about Yoga Maya and Mahamaya, because if Yoga Maya, if person comes into Yoga Maya, then he not supposed to forget the Lord, actually. And he's supposed to follow the Lord. And all those things are there.
Mm-hmm.
So here we see that when you're saying that he comes in Yoga Maya, that he's not going to accept the work on for the pleasure of Krishna. Rather, if the person who comes under Yoga Maya, he works for Krishna. That's what I have said.
But sometimes under Yoga Maya, they may also argue with Krishna and confront him and chastise him, like Mother Yashoda. She chastised him and pulled his ear and then tied him with a rope. Said, you bad boy, you stay there, you know. So there may be some, you know, unusual behavior when a person is in Yoga Maya, because they're not understanding Krishna's divinity. So Arjuna, sometimes he's acting here like being unaware of Krishna's divinity. That's one aspect. And the other is that just like Parikshit was put under Yoga Maya and became upset with Rishi, Samika Rishi, and that was the premise of the whole Bhagavatam being spoken. Lord Shiva acted as Shankar, Adi Shankar, and propagated atheistic philosophy, impersonal philosophy. And again, later he fought against Krishna. with Banasura, right? So he's also a pure devotee, and he's acting, fighting against the Lord. Bhishma is also fighting against the Lord. And so here, this Yogamaya is not, it's different from just some Vrijavasi, you know, falling in love with Krishna, forgetting that he's God, so that he becomes more intimate with God. But rather, Arjuna is being used as an instrument by the Lord so that the Bhagavad Gita will be spoken, and that he will relieve the burden of the earth from all the demons, and at the same time enlighten all conditioned souls by speaking the knowledge given in the Gita. So we can think more like Maharishi Pariksit, that kind of Yogamaya, that because it's an important or crucial instrumental role in order that something may appear, Arjuna is being placed in Yogamaya. And Krishna told Vishnu Chakravarti had Thakur has commented also that Krishna told him that I'm using you as an instrument to speak to all the conditioned souls. Not that I'm aware. Yogamaya Samadhi.
That is referring to the conditioned souls.
Yes.
So that also is Yogamaya.
Yes, that's true. Well, Yogamaya, in that verse, it's just kind of Krishna's, from his viewpoint, it's Yogamaya, everything's Yogamaya, because it's his energy. Yogamaya is just the source, the original form of that, his Maya. And when someone is his devotee, It bewilders them and brings them closer or engages them in his lila in some way. That's our definition now. And so then Mahamaya also covers them, but then allows them to think of themselves separately, and it keeps them and it sends them further away from surrender to the Lord. I've just seen it like mentioned in many commentaries, and you know, so, but I'm not aware of any verse which defines the difference of these things. Not as yet, at least.
I don't understand. Yogamaya means Krishna is like Krishna's desire that the jiva goes into illusion, and Mahamaya by his own desire. Is this a correct understanding?
Yeah, that's part of it, yeah. Yogamaya is internal energy and Mahamaya is external energy. So, yeah, based on the conditions, Jiva's desire to be separate, then Krishna allows him to be Vina Prakriti. He's absorbed in that external separated energy. Well, Jai and Vijay are put into Yogamaya. because they wanted to please the Lord by their fighting with the Lord. So they're put into Yogamaya to act as demons. And actually, Jiva Goswami, in context with Bhishma Dev also, he comments that in the Bhagavatam that Krishna made Bhishma do what he did, like act separately, and gave him a kind of, you know, whatever, contradictory mentality or asuric mentality. So Krishna does this with his pure devotees. So there's some, at least the acharyas have explained these things. As far as a, you know, direct verse, I haven't seen yet.
Yesterday we were hearing that Krishna is telling that there is no sin by killing aggressors. Aggressors, and it's mentioned in Dharma Shastra, he says. And Arjuna says that according to Arjuna, Shastra, but he says, according to Dharma Shastra, there is sin. So,
well, no, he actually says the precise thing is that according to Dharma Shastra, one should never kill one's relatives or seniors, respectable persons under any circumstance. So that,
I had a doubt regarding this, that these things are mentioned somewhere, like in Gita Amritam also, many times the statements which are not there in Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
So there is some reference for these additions.
Yeah, those are from the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakrabarti, Thakur, and Baladeva Vibhushan. That was kind of, that particular statement is not exactly correct because it was kind of edited for drama. Because as I recently looked at Dharma Shastra, it doesn't say that Dharma Shastra says that there's sin, but it just says it condemns killing seniors or relatives in any condition. So you could extrapolate it and say, yes, the Dharma Shastra says there's sin. It's just a dramatic way of presenting it.
And some words like Gudakesh, yesterday you were telling this, who attend the sweet favors of Brahma Vishnu Kodesh. So this, also he actually meant that time, Sanjaya spoke these things.
What, Sanjaya meant that? Well, the Acharya is just explaining, you know, that there may be different connotations to the words. I don't think Sanjaya was aware of that. I mean, possibly he was.
It's just that.
Oh, it's hard to say.
So, what is the purpose of picking out these meanings from the words?
What's the purpose? I don't know. Just to relish the Bhagavad Gita. You know, because when you read these things in the future, then it has a different, another meaning, you know. There's layers of meanings usually in the scriptures. And the acharyas are the ones who, kind of like interior decorators, you know. You know, like if there's like someone has a living room with a red couch, or it's like red with flowers and yellow flowers, and he may put some red and yellow pillows and put a red curtain to extract the red. He wants to extract the red from the couch, which has many different colors, and some of it's red. So the acharyas, they make their commentaries like an interior decorator decorates a room. And he may stress one thing to extract the color from, or the mood, or the exchange that's in the particular scripture. And that's why there can be, you know, 10 commentators on one verse in any scripture, or even more. It's unlimited. And once Prabhupada was thinking, it's in the beginning of the Surrender Unto Me as a quotation, where Prabhupada was thinking, oh, which book shall I translate next? And devotees were making some suggestions, and Prabhupada thought, what about Bhagavad Gita? And then the devotee said, oh, you've already translated that. And Prabhupada said, yes, but that's only one translation. There could be 10. We can translate Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's, Ramanujacharya's, Baladeva Vibhushan, and Madhvacharya's, and, you know, we could have 10 Bhagavad Gitas. Yeah. I mean, it's unlimited, really.
A part of Leela.
Yeah.
So my question is actually for a long time some people also ask me that any time the Lord comes and all the these demons also like associates, because you told that people, those who understood that Krishna is God, they go to the Vaikuntha, and those who didn't understand, they remain in the Brahmajyoti.
Right.
So like people like Dhritarashtra, how they can be part of, like you were saying that he's a special person,
Well, Garga Samhita mentions that he's some kind of demigod named.
If anybody has participated in the Lord's Lila, he has done something very great in the past. Otherwise, how he got that fortune?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, it's they're all playing a role. They're all playing a role. Even Duryodhana is a part of Kali's, Angsha of Kali's. But what's your question?
My question was that are they really special? There was some reason. I don't think they're special.
Yeah. They're all special.
Special in the sense they have done something like some.
I mean, maybe. I mean, there was millions of soldiers, and they're not all demigods, but they're all pious, and they all achieved liberation from fighting in the battlefield. I mean, even if Krishna wasn't there, they would have went to Swarga by the blessing of Indradev and King Kuru. And so they attained Sayuja Mukti. It's like worse than hell, but but Prabhupada does mention in one commentary in Bhagavatam that it's very rare, very very rare, but a person can be elevated from Ramajyoti into Vaikuntha somehow. So there may be some kind of unique circumstance. Like Narada Muni flying through the Ramajyoti singing Hare Krishna or something, and Jiva, Hare Krishna, he gets liberated by Kunti or something like this. So, there's still hope, even if somebody goes to Ramajyoti. Generally, devotees try to avoid that as much as possible, because there's no seva, there's no bhav, there's no relationship with Krishna.
Because in one purport, Prabhupada writes that it's not that any time that demons will participate in the Lord's Lila, they're associated. Sometimes they're actually demons. That's not an answer. It's easy, he writes.
Well, Prabhupada said it then, that's true. I mean, Jayan Vijay, that was just one time. Yeah. It's not that every time Nisringadev or Varaha comes that he kills Jayan Vijay, then they're real demons. So that was just that one time that it happened. There's a statement in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the commentary like that. I forget exactly what it was. I'd have to look at that again. But it's only that once. Yes.
Krishna says, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Krishna. So he says, personally I come to annihilate the demons. So is there any specific reason for Krishna's not taking part in the battle himself? Apart from the Vittamata, making Arjuna giving him the credit and making him go.
Well, I mean, it's Lila. He made this promise. He gave Duryodhana and Arjuna the choice. Choose me or the army. And he said, I won't fight. You know. And, Baladev didn't want to fight also. He left. Krishna was very much in love with Arjuna. They're very close to the Pandavas. So at least he wanted to support them. And we know that by his presence there, everything happened. So really, when Krishna says, Vinashaya Chaduskritam, he doesn't actually have to personally kill the demons. They're already liberated. So he delivers them from the pain of separation that they're feeling. So he comes personally. And it's Nara Lila, as mentioned in the Brahma Sutras, Lokavat Lila Kaivalyam, that the Lord, he appears and it seems Lokavat, like an ordinary person. His pastimes he is expressing in Nara Lila. So, I mean, if Krishna was fighting and then he killed everyone on the first day, then there would have been, you know, would have been the same. And all of the intrigue and details and all the soldiers fighting each other and the excitement of the war and 18 days and who's going to win and, you know, and Arjuna having to shoot Bhishma. And all of that would have been finished. Right? So it would have been, okay, here comes Bhagavan and he's got his chakra and he just kills everybody, you know, in two minutes and, you know, chops off everyone's head, you know. Right? Then it wouldn't be the same. You know, then there would be no ras, no lila. It would be like Vishnu lila. Then he just comes and kills everyone and then just goes back to Vaikuntha. You know, Rasan Ananta Shesh. Just like he killed Madhu and then he went to Rasan Ananta Shesh, because it's not much of a pastime then. There's nothing to read. You know, the Mahabharata would be one page, you know. Then Bhagavan came, he took out his chakra. Everything was finished, and then the Pandavas regained their kingdom. They lived happily ever after. Yes?
Generally, when we discuss about Bhagavad Gita outside, the Karmis ask this question that the Bhagavad Gita talk about 45 minutes.
You tell me.
Around that much.
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions, and we're about to read this, it's in one of the next verses coming up. Let's see. In text 10, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented, and Prabhupada has written this in his comment in his purport. It appears that the talk between the master and the disciple was openly exchanged in the presence of both armies, so that all were benefited. Meaning that, you know, the exchange, Arjuna's lamentation, and Krishna's instructions were visible or audible to everyone who was there. Somehow or other, was Krishna's mystic power. So, I mean, if Krishna could make that available, at least for those who wanted to hear it, you know, and if they're like, you know, 20 miles down on a battlefield, somehow they're able to hear, you know, and see what's going on, then Krishna can also squeeze the whole conversation into 45 minutes if he wants to, or even 10 minutes. Because if you try to chant the verses, you know, it'll probably take you at least an hour, I think, to chant the whole Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, Arjuna and Krishna, they're not speaking so fast. Right? So, and it's not that the soldiers are just all standing there. Because Bhishma already blew the conch shell. And then after that, Krishna draws Arjuna's chariot in the middle. And then everyone's just standing there. And they're not, you know, they're not kind of waiting and going, oh boy, you know, how long is this going to take? Come on. You know, when are we going to fight? You know? You know? You know, somehow they're engaged. Because actually, if they couldn't hear it and they didn't know, they probably would have just started rushing to kill each other, I would imagine. But it was so dramatic, and so the knowledge was so potent, and Krishna just is so attractive, so he just kind of, you know, grabbed everyone's mind and just, you know, riveted their minds on the conversation. And so they were all, you know, listening to the Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, so whether it took 10 minutes or an hour or 45 minutes, doesn't really matter, really, in one sense. And Krishna can stretch time in and out, up and down, you know, and the all physics of time and space are flexible to him. It's just like play. Like in Braj Leela, he's in Nandagaon and he's a small boy. How does he go all the way over to Jamuna and then come back? Right? And how did he, you know, the 1 year passed when the cows and boys were, you know, in the cave at Govardhan, or on the bank of the Jamuna, invisible, playing, without eating or sleeping, you know. For 1 year, they didn't eat or sleep. They were just playing. And for them, it felt like a few minutes. You know, how does he do that? That's his potency. He has a Chintya Shakti. So he's revealing that a Chintya Shakti in Braj and in Kurukshetra. And therefore, he can make so many adjustments for the pastime.
Srila Prabhupada mentioned how long it took that
day? I don't know. Have you seen?
Prabhupada mentioned 1.5 hours.
1.5 hours. In a lecture?
Section of yoga.
Uh-huh. That's about the time it takes to chant the verses. At a normal rate of speed. So that sounds logical to me. You know, if Prabhupada said like that, then we should accept. Yeah? The soldiers might, from hearing the Bhagavad Gita, they might have changed their minds and surrendered to Krishna. Well, he was also encouraging Arjuna to fight. So maybe they became more determined to fight, and, you know. Maybe some of them started thinking of Krishna while they were fighting. So possible. There was millions of soldiers. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Prabhupada mentions in the commentary that it was visible to, you know, those who could see it. Let's use the microphone, okay? Once again.
You mentioned how Satyaki survived the massacre which Ashwatthama did at night. Was he not there, or what happened with him?
The massacre of?
The night massacre by Ashwatthama.
Because Kshatriya is quite an elevated person. He is a courageous, resourceful, powerful, as Ishwar Bhava, doesn't flee from the battle. So if, you know, if there's any soldiers that flee from the battle, they're not Kshatriyas. That's one thing. It's not courageous and powerful. I would say that since I haven't seen any definitive statements, we can only use our intelligence. Because Krishna gives the definition of the qualities of a Kshatriya. But we know that a lot of soldiers, you know, they saw Bhima, you know, they just faint or run away or something like that. So that would indicate that perhaps they're not Kshatriyas. Just like Vaishyas, they also engage Shudras for doing a lot of field work in the agricultural fields. So they're working on the fields, but they may not be Vaishyas. So similarly, I believe that in the battle, there may be a lot of foot soldiers that are engaged, and you know, by bigger leaders, the Kshatriyas, but they may not be real Kshatriyas. But I would say in general, men who have a tendency towards that, through fighting, and they're not afraid, I would imagine that it's like this. But they may not have all of the qualities of a Kshatriya. But there may be a few, you know, Shudras, you know, just somehow they kind of enter into the army. That's possible. But I would think in general they're men who have a martial spirit. So in essence, they're Kshatriyas, but they may not be real, you know, Kshatriyas in the full sense of the definition. Okay, let us start. Right? Because we have chapter 2 sitting in front of us. Unless you have some very important question. But let us see. Let us begin now. So in this second chapter, Krishna delineates the symptoms of liberated soul. And he removes the darkness caused by lamentation and grief by first giving wisdom to discriminate between matter and spirit. Therefore, this chapter is called Sankhya Yoga. Arjuna has given four reasons for not fighting so far. And there's one reason left, which he mentions in chapter 2. And the first reason was compassion for relatives. So now, Krishna is going to confront that first objection of Arjuna. But that will be coming from text 11. So he, in order to dispel Arjuna's lamentation and darkness, he gives him enlightenment in the form of discrimination between matter and spirit. And this is the way that Krishna relieves Arjuna of his lamentation, his false compassion for his relatives. And Krishna then goes ahead to the second reason in the next section, like this, one after another. It's very systematic, actually. So, let us chant. Sanjayo vacha tam tata kribaya vishtam ashru purla kulekshanam vishidantam midam vakyam uvacha bhujasurana. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudan, Krishna, spoke the following words. So, just taking off from the last chapter, Arjuna had visridja sa sharam chapam. He put down his bow and he was overwhelmed with lamentation. So here Sanjaya just is restating that. And he's kripaya vishtam. He's covered by this compassion. And ashuporna akulekshana. His restless eyes are full of tears. Vishidantam idam bhakyam. He's lamenting, and then he begins to speak to Madhusudan. So Baladeva Vibhushan mentions that Sanjaya indicated to Dhritarashtra that the Lord would alleviate or remove Arjuna's lamentation just as he easily killed the Madhu demon. So Krishna will kill the demon of Arjuna's doubts, which he expressed in the last chapter. And Lord Shiva says in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana that if one remembers Madhusudan amidst great difficulties, then those difficulties turn into his opulences. So Arjuna is at least thinking of Madhusudan, and he's on the same chariot. So we see that his great difficulty will turn into his great glory and opulence for the Pandavas. Prabhupada also mentions in his purport, the word Madhusudan is significant here. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu, and now Arjuna wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that had overtaken him in the discharge of his duty. So here we see Baladeva Vidyabhushan's comment is echoed by Srila Prabhupada in his commentary. The more you compare the various commentaries, the more you can actually, your faith in, and appreciation for what Prabhupada has done will increase more and more. Because he takes different statements and he presents them in a very simple way for the modern man. But he's coming right in the line of all the Gaudiya Vaishnavacharyas. He's not just making things up, and often he's paraphrasing verses from the Puranas or various scriptures, or he's just rephrasing statements from the Acharyas. Like this, you know, 95. And then sometimes he makes his own comments, which are also in the same Siddhanta as our Acharya's line. So he's also expanding the knowledge. He's, you know, he's furthering the Gaudiya commentators. So he Prabhupada also mentions that this chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul as explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna. So there you have Sankhya Yoga, right? By analysis, by analytical study. Okay, text number 2. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Kutastva Kashmilam Yedam Vishame Samupashtitam Anarya Tushtam Asvargyam Akirti Karam Arjuna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, said, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy." So here, the first time is mentioned Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. That Krishna is not just some prince from Dwarka, he's Bhagavan. And Prabhupada's commentary is devoted to this point. You'll see he's quoting Vedanti Tattva Vedas. There's three aspects of the Absolute, and the highest one is Bhagavan. He mentions in the third paragraph, the Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva, and mentions the six opulences, which is given by Parashara Muni, who was Vyasadeva in his past life, by the way. So you already know these opulences very well. And, Parashara Muni was Vyasadeva in his last life. And now he's the father of Vyasadeva. Yeah. So in every yuga, or, you know, there's another person who takes the role as Vyas. So Vyas is a Shaktivesh avatar, the Jiva Eva Mahatmaha. Rupa Goswami has described that they're jivas, and they're empowered, avesh, shakti-avesh, they're invested with a certain potency. And I think it was, I can't remember, it was mentioned that who will be the next Vyas? Maybe it's Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama or one of the persons, he'll become the next Vyas. Like this. So, now, Jiva Goswami has also explained the word Bhagavan in his Bhagavad Sandarbha. And he mentions the word Bhagavan. Bhaga means opulences, and it can be denoted from the word bha, which can be extracted from the word bharta, which means maintainer. Krishna says, Katir Bharta Prabhu Sakshi Nivasa Sharanam Surit. And I am the goal and the maintainer, the witness, abode, and most dear friend. Like this. So the Lord maintains the living entities through light, sunshine, fresh air, water, and food, vegetables, fruits, etc. But he also maintains them by giving himself to them, by coming and presenting his pastimes, and by sending his devotees to them to spread love of God, and coming in the form of various shastras, various deities and holy places. He's coming and maintaining the living entities on the spiritual platform also, not just on the material platform. And then Jiva Goswami explains the syllable ga in bhaga as gamayita, which means that the Lord gives transcendental qualities, divine qualities to his devotees. Yasya bhakti bhagavati akinchana savaya gunas tatra samasate sura. All the good qualities of the demigods. And that he gives them prema bhakti also. Not only good qualities. The second aspect of namayita. And then also, last but not least, the third aspect of Gamayita is that he brings them to his own planet. So, other than having opulences, Krishna likes to share those opulences with his devotees. He gives them good qualities, he gives them prema, and then he is feeling separation from his devotees, so he brings them to his own planet. This is perhaps a further endearing quality of the Lord. And another definition of the word Bhagavan. So Parashara Muni has given us the basic meaning, and Jiva Goswami has gone a little further. That is mentioned in the Ishopanishad, text 16, I believe. Something like this, right? Prabhupada quotes from the Sundarbas in his commentary. So, Krishna says, Kutaha, tvam kashmalam idam. Where has these impurities come from, Arjuna? That you are the son of Indradev, and you're in the royal dynasty of Pandu. All of your predecessors were great, fearless warriors, emperors of the earth. And you have been trained by Drona, and you have been given weapons by the Devas, and you've been blessed by Indra, and you have so many weapons and the blessings of so many persons, and all of your brothers are depending on you. They were tolerating the exile for 14 years and were all depending on you to come with your Gandiva bow and destroy the Kaurava army. And now you're going to sit in a chariot crying like a child, and you're not going to fight? Huh? What is this? Kutaha! Where has this come from, Arjuna? And especially now, Vishame Samupastitam, all of the kings have come from all around the earth planet to fight this battle that we've been waiting for 14 years. Your brother Bhima is surging with anger. Smoke is coming out of his ears. He's just dying to kill the Kauravas. And now you're going to just sit down and just forget about everything? Give up the fighting? You want to go into the forest and sit like a rishi? Huh? Arjun, what is wrong with you? This is Anaryajushtam. This is not befitting a man of great high qualities of the Aryan race. The word Anaryajushtam, it implies that this action would not be appreciated by noble persons or respectable persons. Then why are you doing this, Arjuna? Your action will not bring you to Svarga, and neither will it bring you Kirti. It's Akirti Karam. It is a cause of infamy. Hey Arjun, I think this is not a very good decision. So immediately Krishna begins getting on his case, because he's Bhagavan and Arjuna is his eternal devotee. So now Krishna continues in text 3, chastising Arjuna. Do not yield to this degrading impetus. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O Parantapa, chastiser of enemies. So he says, Klaibyam, that this is impudence. Some implied insult is there, like a eunuch. You're a eunuch, Arjuna. You're acting like a eunuch, not like a kshatriya. Masma, gama partha. Partha, do not be a coward. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions, do not be a coward. So this klaibhyam comes in the form of cowardice, especially for a kshatriya. That is his impotency or lack of potency. He says, naetat tad upapadyate, that this is never befitting for you. Kshudram, this is a very petty thing. Small thing. Ridayad dhalbhalyam. And actually, it is weakness of heart. Because Arjuna is actually arguing with Krishna here. In the commentators' tikas, they mention that Arjuna says, no, this is not weakness of heart. This is my religious feelings. It's my discrimination. I've decided not to fight based on Shastra. And also because of my great compassion for Bhishma and Drona, and my respect for Bhishma and Drona and all my relatives, why should I fight them? And then Krishna says, Partha, you're the son of Pritha, but you're quitting the battlefield? Don't go like this. Don't become impotent and overpowered by attachment. Better if someone else becomes Shatrubandhu. You're my close friend and relative, so it doesn't befit you to become a Shatrubandhu or a friend of a Kshatriya. Prabhupada echoes in his commentary, Krishna did not want Arjuna to become an unworthy son of a Kshatriya. Arjuna was the most intimate friend of Krishna, and Krishna was direct. Arjuna might argue that he would give up the battle on the grounds of his magnanimous attitude for the most respectable Bhishma and his relatives. But Krishna considered that sort of magnanimity mere weakness of heart. So Arjuna may say that it is due to my religiosity and my discrimination that I have decided not to fight. And Krishna says, no, it is not correct. This is your weakness of heart, Arjuna. Now you give it up and stand and fight. Chakto tishta parantapa. Para means the other side, the others, the enemy. And tapa means who inflicts punishment upon them. So he says that you are Parantapa. You are not a eunuch. So now get up and fight. So Prabhupada echoes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary in his purport. So if a Kshatriya declines to fight, then he becomes the unworthy son of a Kshatriya. Just as the son of a Brahmin who doesn't study Shastra and is not peaceful or sense control, he becomes a Brahma Bandhu. So here Krishna is saying that don't become a Kshatra Bandhu, just a relative of Kshatriya. But you have to show, because you are Parantapa. You have to show what is a real Kshatriya. So now Arjuna begins to argue. Arjuna vacha katam bhishmam aham sankhe dronam cha madhusudana ishubhi pratyochyami pujaha arisudana. Arjuna said, O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counteract with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona, who are worthy of my worship? So, Vidyabhushan says that Arjuna used the same words, or almost the same words, Madhusudan and Arisudan. They were two very similar, because he was, it almost has the same meaning, because he was in such great anxiety that he didn't remember that he had already addressed the Lord as Madhusudan. And then he said Arisudan. That means he's in so much anxiety at this point. So he's saying, this is argument that how can I counteract in the fight people like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? I should be offering them flowers, not arrows. Right? Pujarha. Those who are worshipable should be offered flowers and respects. And pranams, not arrows. They're great persons and they can never be fallen. How can you ask me to kill my relatives? You kill persons also, but you don't kill your relatives, you kill demons like Madhu. You're Madhusudan. Not Madhu, the king who's in the Yadu dynasty, right? But the demon Madhu, in Arisudan, the enemy. You kill of the enemy. You wouldn't kill Sandipani Muni, would you, Krishna? Or your own relatives? Then you're asking me to kill my guru? Prabhupada mentions Sandipani Muni in the commentary. Would Krishna ever attack his own grandfather, Ugrasen, or his teacher, Sandipani Muni? These were some of the arguments offered by Arjuna to Krishna. So again, these are mentioned by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So even if there are these Drona and Bhishma, even if they're sometimes harsh or whatever, they should never be harshly treated. In the Dharma Shastras, it is the general etiquette is mentioned that superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight. So Krishna is not Yadu Sudan or, you know, like that. He's Arisudan. He kills demons. So Arjuna is mentioning like this, Sandipani Muni, Ugrasen, you wouldn't kill them. And Arjuna continues in text 5. Guru Nahatva hi Mahanubhavan Shreyo Bhaktum Bhakshamaki Adote Akvayatta Kamam Stugurum Nihai Bunjiya Bhogan Rudina Pradikhan. It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. So here, Arjuna mentions this bhiksha or bhakshyam, which means to beg. It would be better for me to become a beggar, because if a kshatriya has no place to rule, then he has no choice. He has to become a beggar. It would be a great disgrace. But Arjuna thinks that would be better than killing my relatives and winning the kingdom, because even if I become a beggar, at least I may lose my fame, but at least my future lives won't be spoiled because of the sin of killing my elders. So it would be better to beg than to kill my teachers. And besides, great souls like Bhishma, they cannot be fallen. They should never be disrespected. Prabhupada mentions that Bhishma and Drona were obliged to take the side of Duryodhana because of his financial assistance, although they should not have accepted such a position simply on financial considerations. Under the circumstances, they have lost the respectability of teachers. But Arjuna thinks that nevertheless they remain his superiors, and therefore to enjoy material profits after killing them would mean to enjoy spoils tainted with blood. So, it's true, according to the pastime, and Bhishma himself had actually told Yudhisthira that if someone eats the food of someone who is materialistic, even someone like myself can be affected. So, Krishna is arguing that that Bhishma has lost his greatness due to being connected with the Kauravas, accepting financial support and grains. He's actually eating their food. So that in this way, even Bhishma becomes affected. But this is again Leela. It is Yogamaya, because Bhishma is again a pure devotee. Mahanubhavan. There are great souls. So better I become a beggar, Arjuna says. Actually, that shows Arjuna is a very renounced person, because of his great ethics and morality. He would prefer to lose his fame and be disgraced as a beggar than to actually kill his superiors, which he feels is incorrect. So he's willing to suffer for his idea, his values in life. He's willing to change his whole life. It shows that he has a great character. So now in text 6 we see he gives the fifth argument, which is indecision. So let us chant text 6. Na chaitad vidma kataram nugariyo ya bhajaye manya divano jayeyuhu yan evahatpa na jivishamas te vashtita pramukhe dhartarashtra. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battle. So Prabhupada mentions, under the circumstances, that would be another kind of defeat for them. Let's see, he says, let me just read the purport. Arjuna did not know whether he should fight and risk unnecessary violence, although fighting is the duty of kshatriyas, or whether he should refrain and live from begging, by begging. If he did not conquer the enemy, begging would be his only means of subsistence. Nor was there certainty of victory, because either side might emerge victorious. Even if victory awaited them, and their cause was justified, still, if the sons of Dhritarashtra died in battle, it would be very difficult to live in their absence. under the circumstances, that would be another kind of defeat for them. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has commented that by fighting against our gurus, Arjuna says to Krishna, I don't know whether we will be victorious or defeated. I don't even know whether it's better for us to win or to lose. So for us, the result of victory is equal to defeat. So in Arjuna's mind, he sees that the victory would be just as bad as being defeated. So since it's not superior, then why should we go through so much endeavor to fight if the result will be as bad as the defeat? So this is his idea. And Prabhupada comments here that Arjuna's desire to live by begging, although he was born in the royal household, is another sign of detachment. And now, text 7. So now Arjuna reveals to Krishna that actually he's confused and doesn't know what to do. Arjuna sees it as a lose-lose situation. That there's, you know, there's no good way to go. So naturally he feels confused. But because of his purity and his friendship with Krishna, so he takes shelter of Krishna. So when we're also very confused in life, we may come to some junction in our life when we don't know what to do, whether to turn left or to turn right, or to go straight or go backwards. So then at that time, we can do different things. We can, usually we end up spinning our wheels, so to speak, you know, on the mental plane, trying to figure out, you know, everything. But often we find that it's not so easy to do that, isn't it? So maybe some of you have been in such a circumstance in your life, maybe even recently, where you didn't know what to do. You were faced with different kinds of, you know, suffering conditions, or what you saw were results, bad results in any direction that you went, or at least some situation where you were completely confused and you didn't know what to do. And it would be nice if maybe right now, if you can think about that for a minute. Had you ever been in such a situation? And then what did you do? So what you can do is just talk to your neighbors in groups of 4 or 5, something like this. If you never had such a circumstance, then just listen to the others. You know? But if you remember some circumstance where you were really confused, and then how did you get out of that situation? Then relate that to your friends here, okay? Just for 5 minutes, we'll break into little groups and discuss that.
Write on the page that you read,
yes, that's right, transcendental knowledge, direct. What else, someone else, yes, what's that? Oh, so how did you take shelter of the super soul?
Actually, whatever we have been reading in the last time, when we are put into trying situation, those things come in the heart.
Right. Sometimes it just comes, the answers. Yeah?
Intuitively.
Yes, intuitively. From the source. Right. Good. Yes?
Actually,
same. Super. Oh, right. Okay. Someone else? Yes?
Sometimes the guru seeing his disciple in
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, that's as good as the super soul. Yes?
Given opportunity equal to sharing with equal
to sharing with the your peers, huh? Right. That's good. Consulting with peers, Vaishnavas. Send it, yes?
Whenever some problem is there in my spiritual life, and I hear my spiritual master speaking, many times has happened that he is directly addressing the need of my problem.
Right. How does that happen? Anyone else has experienced the same thing? Does anyone who has like a really exciting, dynamic story to tell us? Ah, okay. Tell us a real good, one good story. Put it on the, give him the microphone, please. Your peers have ushered you to share with us.
Nothing was being diagnosed. What was wrong? So there was no question of duty. So I was just I also have got leg deformity. The doctor told me that within 3 to 6 years you will be reduced to a wheelchair. And I also have got a heart problem. The doctor told me that you will not survive for more than, at the most in 40 you will survive. And further what happened was my digestive system went down. So I could take only liquids. I could not take any solid food.
Wow.
So it went down for 6-7 days after I was just taking liquid food, I had become very weak. And a time had come when I did not have the strength to lift my bead bag.
Oh.
So and because this had been going on and I could see no hope in the future. Of any, even if I recovered from this particular phase of bad health, all these other problems were there. So
waiting.
So I had thought that I will just continue my devotional service in a future body. And I'll just
trade it in.
Yeah.
Get a new body.
I thought I would just chant my way to death. So, but I should not do anything without blessings of senior devotees. So then I approached His Grace Rausinder Prabhu. He was my counselor at that time. And when I told him, you are sure. Then he told me a further thing that two very significant points he told me. The first thing he said was, this is basically your, very politely he told me, but this is basically your frustrated ego acting. You want to do many things in life, even in the realm of devotional service, and you're not able to do it. That's why you are here. If you just wanted to practice devotional service, even now you can channel it and do some theory, and you can continue on like this. And the second thing he told was that, no, you are just seeing everything from a material point of view. But you are seeing your body, you are seeing the doctor's reports, and you are seeing what they are saying in the future. But you are not taking into consideration the Krishna factor. Krishna controls everything. And Krishna can alter everything. So you are not taking like in Bhagavad Gita, Duryodhana did not consider Krishna in the or in the battlefield.
Yeah.
So like that you are not considering Krishna factor. So this will give me a lot of food for thought. And somehow just as the sickness was inconceivable, the cure was also inconceivably smooth afterwards. It was unexpectedly very smooth and now I am quite healthy, the leg is not pain, the heart is okay. So the key vital guidance which I got at that time, very grateful for that.
Good, nice. So we must take shelter of Gaur Sundar. That's the moral to the story. Good, thank you very much. So Prabhupada has written in text 7, by nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. In every step, there is perplexity. And therefore, it behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can give one proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. All Vedic literatures advise us to approach a bona fide spiritual master to get free from the perplexities of life, which happen without our desire. They are like a forest fire that somehow blazes without being set by anyone. Similarly, the world situation is such that perplexities of life automatically appear without our wanting such confusion. No one wants fire, and yet it takes place, and we become perplexed. The Vedic wisdom therefore advises that in order to solve the perplexities of life and to understand the science of the solution, one must approach a spiritual master who is in the disciplic succession. A person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. One should not therefore remain in material perplexities, but should approach a spiritual master. This is the purport of this verse. Very important point in our Gaudiya Siddhanta and in the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna, Arjuna is approaching Krishna as his guru. And he says that I am bewildered. Samuda Cheta. My heart is confused and bewildered. By what? Karpanya Dosh. Right? This miserly weakness. In text 3, Krishna mentioned the word Hridaya Durbalya. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has enunciated 4 kinds of weaknesses of heart that devotees must conquer somehow or other with the help of their authority, Vaishnava authorities, Guru, Super Soul, or other Vaishnavas, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Tuchasakti. Oh, I'm sorry, I wrote it wrong. Have that pen again? Tuchasakti. To be attached to insignificant, petty things. Tuchasakti. Yeah, well, together. I'm putting them together. This is... Yeah? Tuccha asakti. Like I know there was one devotee who's quite advanced, but it's like he loves cricket. And he reads the papers and he watches the show, you know, the games, and he knows every player on every team and what his score is and everything, you know. And he likes talking about, you know, maybe he goes outside and, you know, talks to some people about cricket. And it's, you know, it's a very innocent thing. It's not sinful, but it's tuchasakti. It's a weakness of his. Then there's kutinati, which means duplicitous behavior. Or the negative connotation of diplomatic behavior. Which is, or worse, duplicitous, cheating, crooked behavior that Vaishnavas must also avoid. But otherwise, their mind becomes absorbed in always trying to, you know, weave back and forth amongst his, you know, duplicitous lies. Like, you know, it's like a spider. He weaves a web and then he gets caught in his own lies and his own treachery. And then there's no time for relaxing and thinking about Krishna, because you always have to be aware of the political situation and how to deal with this person, what to say to that person, and this and that. So we should be just straightforward to everyone. We should be honest even to our enemies or our so-called enemies. Because then we have nothing to lose and we have nothing to hide and our mind is very clear. And then we can think of Krishna. Then matsarya just means envy. This is the big one, you know, because kama, krodha, lobha, mada, moha, and matsarya, the last one, is actually the culmination of all of the first 5. It's like all of those all rolled up into one ball. Lust and anger and greed and illusion and pride. You roll them all up, mix them in a bowl, and you get envy. So that is really bad. And then the last one is swapratishtita, which means just, you know, self promotion and fame, position. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has described these in his Bhajan Rahasya. He quotes his verse. Vidya tuccha sati kutinati matsayam sva pratishtita vidya dhobayam. There's a verse. It's actually part of a shloka. Vidadarbhayam budai, or Vidadarbhayam ta sashpat. Anyway, I can't remember. So, Krishna has already stated that that's what it is, Arjuna. This is your problem. And Arjuna argued a little bit, but now he's saying, yes, karponya dosh tata svabhava. It's, I'm afflicted with this svabhava. And therefore, prachamitvam dharma, I'm asking you to tell me about my duty. Samudacheta, and my heart is bewildered. So please tell me that which is Shreya, the best benefit for me. And I'm becoming your disciple. So please instruct me. I surrender to you. So he's doing all the right things. He's found an authority, someone he trusts, and he's surrendering, and he's asking Krishna, you please become my spiritual master. The commentaries of Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur describe the arguments that Krishna gives. He says that your arguments of Shastra and logic are so expert, and you've already decided to beg. So what is the need of my instructing you? You've already made up your own mind. And then Arjuna says, but the principles of Dharma are very subtle, and they're very difficult to understand. My intelligence is bewildered. I can't understand on my own. I'm bewildered, so please you instruct me. And then Krishna says, but you're proud, and whatever I say, you'll just try to defeat with all of your so-called scholarship, quoting this shastra and that shastra. So how can I instruct you? And then Arjuna says, no, prapanam, now I surrender to you. No more counter-arguments. I won't unnecessarily counter-argue whatever you say. And then Krishna continues, and they go into the next verse, the commentary to the next verse, that Krishna says, how can I accept a friend as a disciple? We have a friendly mood, and you don't have reverence for me. So it's better if you approach Vyasadeva, or someone that you have respect for. And then Arjuna says, but no one else can help